Among the many things for which Arizona is known, ghost towns hold a special spot in many people's hearts. Lots of us have images in our minds of what they look like. Dusty, empty, probably a tumbleweed or two rolling past, vestiges of time gone by. The cover story of Arizona Highways magazine's October issue is dedicated to 13 of the state's ghost towns. The magazine's associate editor, Noah Austin, edited the piece, and he's with me. And Noah, does the image a lot of us have in our heads match what is actually out there in some of these places?
Well, you know, it really depends on which town you go to. There are some that are, you know, very well preserved, and, you know, they'll be, whether they're managed by the Bureau of Land Management or any, or some other, you know, sometimes there's nonprofits that kind of maintain these places and keep them looking good and everything, or for-profit places that kind of run them as sort of a tourist attraction. In other cases, you know, these are adobe buildings that were built in late 1800s, early 1900s, and they're just sort of fading into the desert. And there's not really a whole lot to see other than, you know, you can have GPS coordinates and you can stand in a place and say, okay, this is where the jail used to be, or this is where, you know, the miners' quarters used to be, or whatever.
In some of the less well-preserved ghost towns, what is the allure for people to go see them, especially if there's not a whole lot to see?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it's just being able to stand in the places where these people stood, where they worked, where the, I mean, obviously not go down into the mine, but this is where a house used to be. This is where the schoolhouse was, or maybe still is in some cases. And I think it's interesting because one of the things I found interesting while I was going around all these towns is that a lot of our reporting in Arizona Highways is about places like Bisbee and Jerome and places that were these mining towns but then had to reinvent themselves when the mines went bust. And they've been able to do that, but I think we forget sometimes that they're the exception to the rule. There are so many other mining towns. I mean, literally hundreds of smaller mining towns in Arizona that weren't so lucky and just sort of faded away when the mines petered out. So it's a really good reminder, I think, of this part of Arizona's history that maybe we don't think about so much.
So you mentioned that in some of these ghost towns, there are nonprofit or for-profit entities that are maintaining them and working to preserve them. How big of a draw are those places for tourists? I mean, can for-profits make money on people coming to visit them?
You know, there are some. There's one in particular down in southern Arizona called Ruby that's privately owned, and, you know, they charge admission to get in. That one, I feel like they can make money because it's very well preserved, and there's a lot of buildings to see, and people can go down there and make, you know, a day of it. And some of the other ones, they're either so remote or there's just not that much to see, so it wouldn't really make sense to charge admission to go and see them. The one I'm thinking of in particular is called Swansea. It's out in western Arizona, kind of up by Parker. And it's at the end of this 25-mile dirt road, no cell phone service. I actually got a flat tire on my way from there, which was a harrowing experience, I'll tell you, changing a flat tire on a dirt road when it was 114 degrees out in the middle of July. Yeah. But that's one that's managed by a government agency, the BLM, and there's a lot to see there. But like I said, it's just so remote that it would be really hard for anybody to sort of manage admission to the site.
You kind of alluded to this, but I'm curious from your perspective and based on the reporting you did, having gone to these places, what is the importance of maintaining them to the extent that they are maintained? And even if they're not necessarily preserved, of having these places that used to be, in some cases, fairly booming, prosperous communities and are now basically, in some cases, just cemeteries, all that's left.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a part, like I said earlier, it's just a part of Arizona's history that you don't think about so much. I mean, you think of ghost towns and you think of places that everyone who lived there is dead, basically. And it was interesting, after this story came out, we got an email from a woman who had lived in Cleeter, which is one of the ghost towns we featured in the magazine. She'd lived there in the 1950s, which was sort of toward the end of its run as a mining town. And, you know, she had all these memories that she shared about they had this stone schoolhouse where, you know, just this one-room schoolhouse. And every week the postmaster would come up from Prescott with a truckload of books. And then those would be their books for the week. And then when they were done with those, you know, bring a new load and bring the old books back to Prescott. So, you know, it was just interesting to hear about. You know, I think we forget a lot of times, I mean, obviously, most of these places don't have anyone living in them anymore, so there's no one there to tell those stories. So I just think it's a good reminder of, you know, this state's past. And the other thing we forget is Arizona is a very young state compared with some of the states back east or what have you. So this is not like ancient history. It's, you know, in a lot of cases, these towns existed 50 or 100 years ago. So
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that there was a woman in one of these towns who lived there not that long ago, relatively speaking, 60 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. You think about ghost towns, I think a lot of people think of, you know, maybe the late 1800s, early part of the 1900s, the early part of the 20th century. Some of these still had people living in them and were still, you know, reasonably okay communities into a time when people living now were alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And, you know, some of these ghost towns, I mean, the definition of ghost town is a little bit subjective, I suppose, depending on who you're talking to. Like, what we at the magazine don't necessarily consider, like, Jerome or Bisbee ghost towns, although they are very different from how they were when they were mining towns. I mean, they've reinvented themselves as tourists and arts communities. But even Cleeter, the one I mentioned, there's people living there today. I mean, it's not completely dead.
In the places where there are still people living, do they object to being referred to as a ghost town?
I don't think they have a problem with it. I think they just don't like people coming around and looking in their windows.
I think that seems reasonable.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know there's a few places down south where there's been news stories and people saying, you know, hey, we're not a ghost town. We're still here. But I think overall, I think for some of them, I think there's sort of this cachet of living in a ghost town. You know, I think they think that's just sort of a cool thing. So, yeah, but I suppose it varies from person to person.
All right, that's Noah Austin, associate editor with Arizona Highways Magazine. He edited the October edition's cover story about Arizona ghost towns. Noah, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thanks for having me.